The intersection of neuroscience and national security is an intriguing place, fraught with excitement, but also a need for caution. Jonathan Marks explains in this edition of the Bioethics Channel. Jonathan Marks is the Director of Bioethics at the main campus of Penn State University. He is currently on leave at Harvard University, and he is the author of A Neuroskeptic's Guide to Neuroethics and National Security in a recent edition of the American Journal of Bioethics Neuroscience. Jonathan, in this article you write about, quoting here, the subtle interplay between the national security and neuroscience communities and the hazards of the mutual enchantment that may cause. Talk about that, if you would, please.
A number of people have already touched upon some of the ethical challenges arising from the application of neuroscience to the world of national security. But one of the things that I wanted to highlight in this piece was one or two of the reasons why those interactions might be problematic. In other words, what I wanted to do was offer an explanatory account before, or suggest an explanatory account before one even gets to the ethical discussion. And what it seemed to me from the lessons I had learned and the result of following a number of things that occurred during the Bush administration's war on terror, what it seemed to me was that there had been some degree of mutual enchantment. What it seemed to me is that there was some degree of mutual enchantment in the neuroscience and national security communities. And what I mean by that is this, that the neuroscience people, neuroscientists, were excited at the prospect of having their work become involved in the national security arena, of their work having relevance, of having practical implications, and of somehow enhancing our national security mission. And so they were incredibly eager to help. And it also seemed to me that this eagerness might have resulted in perhaps a failure to consider more fully some of the ethical issues that this involvement raised. And similarly, it seemed to me in the national security communities that there was a great deal of excitement about the new toys on the block, the new neuroscience tricks. And perhaps it was a failure to think about how neuroscience might reshape the national security mission and how perhaps it might be oversold in the pursuit of the national security mission.
Where, in your view, does this intersection of neuroscience and national security present some hazards?
It seems to me that there are a number of potential hazards. They're not all about the bad application of bad science, or indeed the bad application of good science, for that matter. There are a number of concerns. In my view, these concerns were made somewhat acute by some of the experiences in the Bush administration's war on terror. And I cite a couple of these in my article. So, for example, when detainees at Guantanamo Bay and elsewhere were not producing what the national security folks considered to be actionable intelligence, the feeling was that the gloves had to come off and some more aggressive techniques had to be used. And the administration turned to a couple of psychologists who really had no experience of real-life interrogation, nor did they have academic credentials that would demonstrate their expertise in this arena. But here were two psychologists who'd previously served in the military and were very, very eager to help. And so their aggressive techniques were employed without, it seems to me, serious consideration not just of the ethics of these techniques, but also of their efficacy. And a second example is the use of neuroscience techniques, whether EEG or fMRI, functional MRI. And in one of my articles, I've discussed in some detail the notion that functional magnetic resonance imaging might be used to pick out suspected terrorists. Now, some academics have said that these technologies will essentially render torture obsolete, to use the word of one commentator. And one of the claims I make in the article is quite the contrary. There's a danger that neuroscience techniques will be used to identify, to screen suspected terrorists from a pool, and then that those terrorists will be, or suspected terrorists, I should say, will be exposed to ever more aggressive treatments. So that seems to me an example of technology not preventing abuse, but rather leading to greater abuse, but in relation to a smaller number of individuals.
I like the subhead in the article, Neuroscience Narratives and Security Semantics. It all starts with language, doesn't it? And it's jealously guarded on each side.
I have to say that I have quite strong views about the language, and what's really interesting is the responses that I've had from members of each community. So in the piece, I point out that the neuroscience world is full of all sorts of terminology. Some of it, I say, are rather bizarre portmanteau constructions of Latin and Greek. The example I give in the piece is the subthalamic nucleus, which might be somewhat infelicitously translated as the nut under the bedroom. But what was interesting was when I made a point about the language, many neuroscientists felt, and one of them responded in these terms to me, many neuroscientists felt, well, we have our language for a good reason, whereas in the national security community, their language is just to make terrible things sound nicer. And my point is that it's certainly easy to be critical of the language games used by other communities, but what I'm more concerned about is talking about the implications of these language games, or I should say these language communities. And what it seems to me to do is the following, that in the case of neuroscience, the language does mean something to members of the neuroscience communities, and it is a very effective shorthand for them when they communicate with each other. But the effect on a lay audience, even if that audience is expert in its own but a very different field, such as national security, the effect on a lay audience is to convey the impression that we know much more about the brain, for example, than we really do. This language essentially conveys we know much more about the brain than I think we do, and that the interventions we might want to design based on neuroscience have a proven efficacy which they do not have. So that was one of my concerns about the use of the language, is that it essentially leads to and exacerbates the mutual enchantment in these two communities.
Jonathan Marino has suggested a National Advisory Committee on Neurosecurity to provide advice on minimizing the misuse of biological research. You think that's a good idea?
I think such a committee is a great idea, and I think if anyone deserves to be on that committee, it would be Jonathan Marino for sure. And I think that committee would be doing something useful if it had the ability to scrutinize the abuses of neuroscience inside as well as outside government. So I think that's a good idea, but in the piece I also argue for something a little different and a little broader, which is a more public discussion, a more informed debate about the legitimate uses and abuses of neuroscience. And that debate is a complex one, which seems to me involves consideration of a range of social, ethical, and legal issues. But it isn't simply about what some people might consider to be hand-wringing about the hazards of neuroscience in national security context. It also involves some really serious discussion about what neuroscience is doing to the national security mission and what national security is doing to neuroscience and whether these are good things. And just to give an example of how technology can change nature of the national security enterprise, there was a time when the U.S. military had a number of incredibly talented and experienced interrogators, but along came all sorts of surveillance techniques especially in the 80s and 90s, not just communication interceptions, but also satellite imagery and a whole host of other techniques, and we sort of deprioritized what used to be called human intelligence or human intelligence gathering. And that meant, incidentally, that when we embarked on the war in Iraq, we suddenly had hundreds and thousands of hundreds of prisoners, and then very shortly thousands of prisoners, and not enough people with the interrogation skills in order to work out who was who had useful information and who did not. So as well as thinking about the ways in which national security endeavors can change the funding of neuroscience and the shape of neuroscience research and the focus of neuroscience research, it's also important to think about how neuroscience might change the national security mission.
Why should a person on the street care about this?
Well, I think the person on the street should care about this both from the point of view of neuroscience and from the point of view of national security. These are days when, these are times when we're all warned about the dangers of spiraling medical costs and the like. And we have all sorts of concerns about the expensive nature of medical interventions. And here we have a lot of money being expended on the use of very, very fancy medical equipment. And one might ask how this is shaping the practice of medicine, how it's shaping the use of these technologies, how it's shaping the kind of neuroscience research that is being done today. And similarly, as I've said, if we take national security seriously, then we should be concerned about the both an effective as well as an ethical national security policy. And if neuroscience turns out to make it ineffective or less effective in ways we didn't anticipate, and also perhaps troubling ethically in ways we didn't anticipate, then those should be things of concern to the general public.
Jonathan Marks is the director of the bioethics program on the main campus at Penn State University. He's currently on leave at Harvard. His article, Neuroskeptic's Guide to Neuroethics and National Security, is in the American Journal of Bioethics Neuroscience. For more information, visit bioethics.net. That's bioethics.net. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.